It is inevitable that if the wife moves towards God and the husband moves towards God, you will always move toward one another. I am so glad you're here this weekend, and before I jump right into the message, I want to just cover just a couple things. One would be, as we kick off a brand new year, 2019, for those of you that financially support CCV, I just want to say thank you. You know, I don't know if everyone understands this, but 100% of the ministry that happens here, our ability to expand and reach more people in the valley, our ability to offer great programs for you and for your kids, our ability to do all the ministry we do is 100% supported by those of you that give. And by the way, if you're new to CCV, there's no pressure on you that you give at all. As a matter of fact, you may notice we don't even pass an offering at all here. You might think, well, how do people give? Well, we have offering boxes set up in our auditoriums that you can give there. There's some giving kiosks in our lobby. But the vast majority of people, 80%+, the way they give is they give online or through our mobile app. It's the easiest, most secure way to give. So if you're here today and you would say, I love my church, this is my home church, I love what CCV does for me, for our family, I want to encourage you, the beginning of the year is the best time to start giving if that's something you don't do right now to the church that you love so much. So I just want to encourage you with that. And I also want to let you know that when you give to CCV, we take financial stewardship incredibly, incredibly seriously, okay? I'm so big on this that every dollar we get, we steward really, really well. And so to that end, let me just let you know this year, starting in February, we're gonna change how we distribute the program notes that you get every weekend. What happens today is you walk in and we kind of hand you a program like this, and you know, some of you use it, some of you don't, some of you scribble a little bit, some of you don't, some of you take it and just toss it. What we're gonna do starting this year is we're gonna move to all digital notes, okay? And we're gonna do this for a few reasons. One is, our mobile app, if you've never used it, it is incredible. It is the best way to find out and keep up with everything going on at CCV. It also stores your notes there. You can always go back and access them, always historically, right at your fingertips. Another big reason we're doing this is, you wanna know how much it's gonna save us by not printing a custom program for 9 campuses, going on 10 campuses this year? Any guesses? It's gonna save us $200,000 a year by doing this. So this is a big stewardship move for us, we think is really, really good. You can clap on any of our campuses for that. We think that's a really good move. It also is gonna help us environmentally. We don't print as many things that we just toss. And so I know some of you would still rather take written notes. I like taking written notes, okay? So when you come in to the auditorium, we're still gonna have a blank note page for you to use if you still wanna take written notes. We're just not gonna pass it out. You can just pick it up on a table right on the way in, but just wanted to let you know that is coming. This weekend, we're starting week 2 of our series we've been in, The Vow. And what I love about this series is that it doesn't matter if you're a single, it doesn't matter if you're married, it doesn't matter if you were previously married, it doesn't matter if you never want to be married. This series has something for everyone. And I'm going to teach the next 3 weeks of this series, and I want you to know that this weekend, this message is by far the most personal to me. It's the one I almost feel the most passionate about. And the reason why is because this topic we're talking about today, the vow of partnership, it's the one that Jamie and I, my wife, and I feel like we have to work on the most. We have to fight for the most. So to kind of get us headed in the same direction today, let me just ask on all of our campuses, everybody participating, raise your hand if you would say, I married someone very different than me. Anybody, you very different than you? Wow, right? Some of you want to keep your hand up. They're like, they're really different, okay? I was writing this message and I literally just stopped and I picked up the phone and I called Jamie. I said, hey, how would you say that we're different from each other? And I'm going to give you her exact verbatim response. She said this, in every way. And we both just started laughing on the phone because in some ways, That's a really true statement. I started writing some things down. I mean, Jamie's an introvert, I'm an extrovert. Jamie's very sensitive, right? I can be a little more dominant. Jamie's very patient, right? She'll stop and smell the roses. I like to run over the roses. If it gets me where I'm going faster, I mean, I just wanna go, right? I mean, Jamie can be a little more cautious. I can be a risk taker. She likes things planned out. I can be a little more spontaneous. I mean, I could go on and on and on. She has brown eyes, I have blue. She's short, I'm tall. Late at night when we're in bed, she likes to talk. I'll just leave it at that. But I mean, I'm telling you, we're just so different. And many of you can relate because that's where you're at. What's so interesting to me is that when you're dating, what do opposites do? They attract. I mean, we love that. When you get married, what do opposites often do? They attack. I mean, and it's just kind of the way it is. And you know, if you're single here today, or maybe you're dating, this is really important for you to know, right? Because when you're dating someone, sometimes the thing that's opposite of you, it's very attractional to you. For example, you know, you may be a little uptight. You know, some of you are very uptight, and they're so easygoing. They're just like, you know, easygoing. And you love that about them. You love it when you're dating. Then you get married, and what happens? I mean, their easygoing nature, all of a sudden you look at them and you go, you're a lazy bum. You know, or maybe you love how structured they are, right? They live in boxes. They have check marks for everything. They have lists for everything. Everything has its place, and that's not you at all. But you love that. I mean, this is so awesome about them. And then you get married, and what do you say? You're a control freak. You have OCD. I mean, you know, it's just how it kind of works. And so you just need to know this kind of going into marriage. And our differences, if we're not careful, they can begin to divide us in marriage. And I want you to know, it does not have to be that way. God designed our differences in marriage to enhance the relationship, to actually strengthen us. He wants to use our differences to do that in our marriage. Satan wants to use our differences to divide us. And that is why what we're going to talk about today, the vow of partnership, is so incredibly important. If you're taking notes today, let me just start this way. Every great relationship has to progress through these three phases, okay? From me to you to we. Now this plays out if you're single, it plays out in business. Let me tease this out in marriage, okay? Before you ever meet someone and you get into a relationship, who's life about? It's about me, right? I mean, just naturally, I get to go where I get to, you know, want to go. I get to do what I want to do. You know, I get to live how I want to live. And then what happens? Someone catches your eye and you think, I want you. And so you kind of pursue them. And what do you want? I want you to like me. But just realize, at least in a marriage context, the goal is always, and the design is to move from me to you, to eventually it becomes all about we. There is no longer me, there's no longer you, it's we. The tragedy of most marriages is most marriages do not get to we. And the reason why, and this is so subconscious, we don't even say this out loud, but what happens for so many of us is we walk into marriage thinking, I want to make you what's best for me. You might think, well, that's not me. Yeah, it's everybody. You want to know why? We have a selfish nature inside every single one of us. Every one of us has a selfish nature. And that's why what we talked about last week, the vow of having God as our number one. If God's not a part of your marriage and your relationship, stripping away those selfish parts of you, making you live your life outside of just you, then what happens is, let me put it this way, the fundamental flaw of most marriages is, I try to make you what's best for me. Here's the problem with that. If I try to make you what's best for me, there's no room for we. Let me say that stronger, because it needs to be said stronger. If I try to make you what's best for me, I will destroy we. And we is the goal the goal and design of marriage. Listen, marriage was not designed by a caveman, and we've just happened to adopt that social construct in our culture, okay? Marriage was designed by God, given to us by God, which means we have to run his playbook or it does not work. So I want to take you to one of the very first passages in the Bible. This is really the opening of God's design for marriage to us. In the book of Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, listen to what God, the designer of marriage, says to us about what he wants for marriage. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24 says this, "That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is what?" Say it out loud with me. "And is united to his wife," and they become what? "One flesh." The word united here in the Hebrew means to adhere, to cling. It literally means to be glued together. That is literally what the word means. And this is the design, is that two people, when they are married, would become one flesh, one. Jesus, as he teaches in Matthew chapter 19, he takes this exact same verse from Genesis chapter 2. He quotes it, but he adds to it. Listen to what Jesus says about marriage. He says, "Haven't you read," he replied, "hey, don't you remember reading all that God said about marriage? That at the beginning, the Creator made them male and female. We are different by design, by our Creator." And then he goes on to quote Genesis 2:24. He says this, "For this very reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh." Exact same verse. But then Jesus goes on to add this. "So they are no longer two, but one flesh." No longer two. You are designed to be we, not you and me. I mean, Jesus is saying this in the strongest possible terms, which means when you get married, there's no longer me, there's no longer you, it is all about we. That's the design of marriage. And what so many people think, if you, you know, we go back to that Matthew 19 verse, so many people think, well, they're no longer two, they become one flesh. And you're like, well, he's just talking about sex. That's what so many people believe. That is not true. Did you know if you look at Genesis chapter 2 in the Hebrew, this verse on marriage that Jesus taught about in the original Greek, there is not one word, tense, or construct of those verses that is exclusively sexual. Jesus is talking about so much more than sex. And you'd say, what is he talking about? It is this miracle of marriage that God, when you get married, does something supernatural. He designs you and bonds you together to be one, which means one in every single way, physically, emotionally, spiritually, sexually, you become one. And as I thought about this and as I was studying these verses this week, I thought, this is so hard to explain. It's almost mysterious what God does in a marriage, his design for it. And then I thought this, and then I remembered Ephesians chapter 5. The Apostle Paul takes Genesis chapter 2 and the quote from Jesus, and he quotes it again, and Paul says this, "For this very reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh." It's Ephesians chapter 5, the Apostle Paul, listen to his very next words. "This is a profound mystery." Yeah, it is. Like, the two becoming one, like, how do we do that? How do we make that work? And just because it's mysterious, do not miss, it's the design. It is the goal. It is your mission that become your marriage, two becoming one. And so what I want to do today is I want to try to put some handles on this idea for you to not only help you understand it, but for all of us to apply this idea of our marriages becoming less about me and more about we. And that's what I want to do today, okay? And I want to do that by looking at a couple different things, but I want to start by just saying this. There's some of you here today that are so fiercely independent that this idea, it maybe scares you or offends you. I mean, you were grown to be an independent person. You thought, in America, I'm supposed to be independent. It's me. And so for some of you that are single, you may not have even thought about this, but the idea of having to become one in marriage, it's what's actually kept you back from maybe even thinking about marriage. Because you thought, maybe incorrectly, well, if I get married, then I have to give up my individuality. I have to give up my personality. And let me just squash that for a moment, okay? I'd say this. The idea of becoming one in marriage doesn't mean you give up your personality at all. Let me just personalize it. When I got married to my wife, I didn't all of a sudden have to become introverted like her. I didn't have to become ultra more cautious like her. I didn't have to give up my personality. Then what's the goal? It's not that you give up your personality. It means you unite around a common purpose. That's what marriage is about. Not giving up your personality, uniting around a common purpose. And when you can do that, when two become one, let me tell you two reasons why this is so powerful in marriage. Two reasons. Two reasons that we is better than me. Number one, you make better decisions together than you ever would apart. Now forget marriage for a second, okay? Because I know not all of you are married. Let me just talk about leadership. If you know anything about leadership, if you want to be a leader, if you are a leader here, here's what you know. As a leader, you will always make decisions that are better when you ask for input from other people. There's never been a leader in the history of mankind that sits in his office all alone and makes all the decisions and they're all right. And that's how it works. It does not work that way in leadership. I've met some people that say this, well, I'm an independent, self-made man. And I think, I am so sorry for you. Because no one has ever accomplished something great in this world on their own. It's always involves other people. This church, when it was founded, our pastor, Don Wilson, he didn't build this church on just him. And I will never let this church be built on just me. It's not built on me. I have an amazing executive team I work with. I have an amazing leadership team at this church. We have amazing staff and volunteers. And I've empowered people. I don't make all the decisions around here. I've empowered amazing men and women that are doing amazing things here. We operate as a team. And you need to know something if you lead or you ever want to be a great leader someday. I've heard John Maxwell say this. He says, the size of your dream will be determined by the size of your team. And in marriage, some of you are not accomplishing much because it's a whole lot of me and there's not a whole lot of we. I mean, I think about my marriage, I think Jamie and I together make 10 times better parents than we ever would trying to operate apart. We make better financial decisions. We grow spiritually together than we ever would apart. And if you're single here today, that doesn't mean that you're at a disadvantage. It just means if you're single, you better be asking for input. If you're a single parent here today, that doesn't mean you're in trouble. It just means as a single parent, involve other people and get other input. But don't miss this. As a married couple, the design is that you will be better together making decisions than you ever would apart. Let me tell you a second reason we is more powerful and better than just me. We gives you intimacy. Me leaves you empty. Now, when I say the word intimacy, men and women oftentimes think of two different things, don't we? Not all the time, but oftentimes we do, let's be honest. I don't care how you define intimacy, physically, emotionally, spiritually, sexually. Until you begin to operate as we, you will not experience intimacy in really any area of your life. And this is a big, big deal for some of you. Let me tell you why. Some of you are sitting next to someone right now, and you're right next to each other in the same chair, like right in chair to chair, and yet you feel miles apart. Some of you go to bed every night, and you crawl into the same bed. You're right next to each other, and yet it feels like there's an ocean separating you. And if that's how you feel, it's likely there's an area in your life where there's a you and a me, and you've not figured out how to get to we. And some of you think in an area. There's like a laundry list of things. And maybe so, maybe so. But what I want to do today, with the little bit of time we have left, is I just want to talk about four areas in your life that you have to begin to develop we. And I want to talk about these four things under the umbrella or the context of developing a common vision for your marriage. A common vision. Listen to what Proverbs 29 says. It says, where there's no vision, the people perish. And you better believe this verse is very applicable to marriage, because what I see in so many marriages is that you're missing a common vision on something. And when you don't have a common vision, without a common vision in your marriage, you have what? Two visions. One person wants to go this way, one person wants to go this way, and do not miss this. Two visions equal division. Every single time. So let me talk about four ways and four areas and then give you some real practical advice. One of these is probably gonna stick out to you as you're taking notes. Four ways and four places we need to develop a common vision in your marriage. You ready? Here's number one. It's by far the most important. You have to have a common vision for your faith. Now I'm gonna just touch on this because this is really what Mark covered last week in the first vow of this series. And if you missed that weekend, you have to go back and watch it. It is so good. But let me just say this. Until God becomes the center of your marriage cannot thrive. You might be surviving, but God is the one that allows you to thrive. It's the only way marriage works is when God becomes number one in your relationship, which means for some of you, the very next step for not only you personally, but for your marriage is for you to take a step to decide to follow Jesus and be baptized. To go public with your faith, which some of you have not done that. Maybe one of you has, or maybe neither of you has. And if you really want your marriage to thrive, God has to be number one. And both of you have to be pursuing God together. Now, some of you have taken that step. You'd say, I'm a follower of Jesus. I've been baptized. But you'd say, here's your issue. You're not growing together in your faith. You're kind of doing your own things. And so, your next step would be, if that's you, if you're not a part of a neighborhood group we have here, these are our small groups that meet during the week with other couples and other singles, that would be one of the greatest things you could do for your relationship, for your marriage, is join a neighbor group and begin to grow in your faith together, not one person doing their thing, another person doing their thing. This is so important to me that I would rather you take out your phone right now, get on our CCV mobile app, which, by the way, has all of our groups listed. It has a map. It's so, this functionality is amazing. You type in your address on a map, it pulls up every group around you, and you can just sign up for a group right then, and you can actually join a group. I'd rather you do that right now and tune me out for the rest of this message. That's how important this is for me. And what it does for my marriage, what it does for every marriage I know that's in a neighborhood group. You know, one of the things Jamie and I have done this year, we're part of a neighborhood group, is one of the things we've done this year too, is we've decided to read the same Bible reading plan. We use the YouVersion Bible app, which has about 1,000 Bible reading plans, and we'll just take turns choosing a Bible reading plan, but we'll do the exact same plan because we're reading the same thing, and it allows us to, on occasion, have conversations, and we're growing together. The point is you have to find a common vision for your faith. This is so big. Let me tell you a second area we have to find a common vision, okay? And that is a common vision for your finances. Every study done on marriage says that at the very top of the list of things that divide and break up marriages is arguing and stress over money. And if that's you, I want to just let you know I can relate. Now, some of you have heard me tell our story early on in marriage. Money almost destroyed my marriage early on. We had so differing views on how we should handle money. And you know what would have helped my marriage early on? If that woman would have just listened to me. I mean, what? Isn't that sometimes how we think? If they would just listen to me, because I'm right. No, you've not found a common vision. And what I've found on this topic of money is so oftentimes the issue isn't even money. You know what it is? It's control. You have a vision for what you want and how the money should be spent, and it's all about you and your vision. You've not found a common vision together. And there's so many things you could do on this. We have a class called Rock Solid Finances I would really encourage you to take. It's so good. But let me just tell you one of the best things Jamie and I have ever done to find a common vision on our finances, and that is we sat down and set some common financial goals for our future. I will never forget when we did this. We sat down, I still have the piece of paper that we wrote down. We sat down and I just asked Jamie, I said, what are some goals we have for our future financially? And we wrote down 11 goals together. I didn't walk in a room and go, woman, here's your goals. We did this together, okay? And that document is so special to us Because Jamie would say this, us doing that and that exercise is what gave us a common vision and united us on our finances more than anything else we've done. Now, we still got to go manage all the money, but this common vision gave us a picture to get us on the same page. And we wrote down goals for how we wanted to be generous, how we wanted to get out of debt, some fun financial dreams we had of things we wanted to do, and it united us. And I'm just telling you, if you're here today and money is dividing you, you have to get some common vision, have some common goals for your future, because you can't let this divide you like it does so many people. Let me tell you a third place you have to have a common vision, and that is a common vision with your family, for your family. Now, this can take a bunch of different paths depending on your family dynamic right now, but I want to talk very specifically to those of you that have kids. If you have kids, here's what you know. Kids can actually divide you, and it's not your kid's fault. It's your fault because you don't have a common vision for how you're going to parent them. You have two different visions. And kids, you know what cracks me up? Kids, even at the littlest ages, they're brilliant. They can sniff out when they see you divided as a parent. They pick it up just like that. And they will play you all day long against each other. If they know that dad sees it this way and mom sees it this way, they will go to the person that they will get it their way. And they know. I mean, they just do this. And it's not their fault. It's your fault for not being consistent in how you're parenting, having a common vision. And to get consistency means that oftentimes both of you have to compromise so you have a united front. A united front is so much more important than one of you just getting your way. And sometimes we as parents, we play into this division. Our verbiage gives it away. Like, for example, you've heard this before. I mean, you maybe even said this. One of your kids does something really bad, gets really in trouble, and here's what you say. Look what your child did. Yeah, this is your child. I didn't do that. Your child did this. And then all of a sudden, your child does something amazing. They get an award at school, and you go what? That's my boy. That's my child. Not yours. I did that. Our verbiage gives away that we're not even on the same page. When you get married, there is no room for me and yours. It's our child that we have to parent together, and consistency is the key. And so if you're a parent here today, you have to be able to develop a common vision for your family. Now, you may think, well, it's so easy for you to say, Pastor. It's probably really easy for you and your family parenting. Not even close. Okay? This is one of the hardest parts of my marriage, is Jamie and I getting on the same page parenting, especially parenting these little suckers called teenagers. I'm telling you, it takes us days, sometimes weeks of conversations to come to a common vision, but we are so committed to a united front that we will do everything we can, take as long as it takes to get there. So don't think that we don't have the same struggles you do parenting. We do. And so we fight for it. Now, I want to acknowledge one group of parents here today that have the hardest time with this, and that is if you're a parent and you're a blended family. Okay, we have so many blended families at CCV. I love that we have them here. One of my best friends in this world, he parents, and he's part of a blended family. And I've seen firsthand how difficult it can be. And it would be so complex for me to try to go into a lot of the details here. But I want to recommend a resource for you. I want you to write this down. I want you to use this book if you know you need to have a common vision in parenting and you're a blended family. It's this book. It's called The Smart Step Family. It's by Ron L. Deal. It's 7 Steps to a Healthy Family, The Smart Step Family. And I'd really encourage this book as a resource to help you find a common vision. But no matter who you are as a parent here today, if you have kids, the goal is you have to have consistency and a common vision. Now, I want to cover 1/4 area you need a common vision. And some of you are going to think this feels very trivial. It is not, by any stretch of the imagination. You need a common vision for fun. What happens in marriages over time is that you can get bored. And you get bored because there's nothing creatively or really from a fun standpoint that's like bonding you together. What happens is, you know, you got the man off doing his thing with his buddies, you got her doing her thing with her girlfriends, and he's got his thing, and she's got his thing, she's got her thing, and there's no thing together. You need a thing together. No, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying you have to have every single one of the same hobbies, do every single thing together. No, that's not realistic. But you need to have a few things you do together that are fun for both of you, because when you have fun together, it bonds you together. And this is a big, big deal for a lot of you that to be able to develop this. Now, if I'm gonna be vulnerable, okay, and I love being vulnerable, so it's how I love teaching. This is the one place where Jamie and I feel like we have some work to do in our marriage. I mean, we love going to dinner together. We love going to the movies together. Yeah, but what are we really doing that's kind of a common thing we love that's fun together? So we've been working on this. And so one of the things we're doing this year, you know what we're going to do this year? We're joining a pickleball league. You're like, pickleball? That's for retired people. No, it's the fastest growing sport among millennials. Did you know that? It's so much fun. If you've never played it, look it up. But I know that Sun City is a big pickleball league. Sun City actually hosts the World Pickleball Championship, I heard. And so Jamie and I are just thinking, we're just training one day. We're coming for you, Sun City, all right? Look out for the Woldridge duo, all right? But we're gonna do some things where we have fun together, and you need to have some things you do fun together. Let me tell you another area we've been working at that we realize is a gap. How we vacation. Oftentimes, you know what we found out? We take a vacation that one of us loves and the other's like, eh. Or you know what's worse? We have been taking vacations that neither of us want to go on. You know why we do it? It's because we got a killer deal. We're kind of cheap. We like to like really steward our resources really well. And so we go on vacations, we're like, this is a good deal. Neither of us want to go. I mean, recently this happened, literally. We had a vacation all booked. I had the plane tickets booked, everything. And we realized neither of us wanted to go on this. So I called the airline and literally canceled our plane tickets and changed them to something else. I had to pay a $250 fee to do that. And that's the best $250 I think I spent all year long, because Jamie and I, together, we take one vacation a year together without the kids. We went somewhere that both of us were excited about, and it bonded us more than anything else. It was so good. And some of you may need to find that. Now, the point is, you need to find some things that you do together that are fun together, not that just one person enjoys. And part of the fun is discovering that together. I don't care how long you've been married. You should discover some things that you like to do together. So what would you do? I mean, maybe take some lessons together in a sport. Maybe take tennis lessons or go try golf or, you know, I don't know. Go run together. I don't know what it would be for you. Go cheer for the Cardinals and like boo the Seahawks when they play them. Like, I don't know, just do something that bonds you together. I mean, for you, you know, it might be that you want to take up like a hobby together. I wrote some things down. You might want to do some cooking classes. You might want to go do a dance class together or take up art together. The fun is discover something together, because when you do things together that are fun, it bonds you and it's a bigger deal than you think. Now listen, these are four areas you need a common vision for your marriage. The four areas are with your faith, with your finances, with your family, and with fun. And my guess is there's one of those that it gets you a little bit. Or you might think you're all good, and you're gonna talk to your spouse, and they're gonna say, no, we actually really have some work to do in this area. But this is where you need a common vision. Now you look at that list, and here's what some of you are thinking. Well, that's a good list, Pastor, but you missed a big one. What about a common vision for sex? Yeah, that is a big one. And that's why next week, that's exactly what we're gonna talk about. Now, you can pray for me, because this took some convincing, okay? But I actually convinced Jamie to join me on stage next weekend, okay, my wife. So we're gonna talk about this together to have a balanced view, and you can only imagine how that conversation went, all right? I actually went to Jamie and I said, hey, would you mind just joining me for like one of the weeks of the vow? And she had no idea what we were gonna preach on and talk on. She's like, well, what would the topic be? And I was like, don't worry about it. We'll figure it out later, you know? I knew what the topic was, you know? But I really want us to have a balanced view. So, hey, you cannot miss next week. We are gonna have a lot of fun talking about getting very real about a topic that, let's be honest, can be a stress and it can be an issue for so many of us. And it has been for our marriage as well. So we're going to be very vulnerable next week. We're going to talk very real on this, but I'm really excited about that. But this week, where does your marriage need to be more about we and less about me? Could you imagine a marriage where it was really about we? Could you imagine not having to argue over the kids all the time because you're not on the same page? Could you imagine the margin you could have financially because both of you have a common vision for your finances? Could you imagine the intimacy that could be developed as you grow in your faith together, as you have fun together? It can happen because we have a God that when you seek God on this topic, that wants to bind you together. Last week, the vow that we talked about, the vow we took was, I vow to make God my number one. The vow I want to challenge you with today is this. I vow our marriage will be more about we and less about me. And only you can take that. But I want you to hear yourself just say this out loud, because some of you need this. So if you feel comfortable, would you say this out loud with me all together, all of us, ready? I vow our marriage will be more about we and less about me. I believe God has someone or a couple here today because he wants to absolutely transform your marriage. So my challenge is this. Sometime this week, I want you to get the kids to bed early, and maybe you talk in your bedroom, or hey, better, maybe get a babysitter, go out on a date. Don't do this when you're in a fight, okay? Like, find a time where, like, you know, it's cordial and it's good, and you get some time together, and you just, here's what I want you to do first. You pray first. You pray and ask God, God, I'm gonna pray. We're gonna invite you into our relationship. We're gonna ask that you would help us become one. God, would you help us be a whole lot more about we than me? And then I want you to pick one of these areas. Don't try to tackle all four. You will fail, okay? You pick the one that needs the most of your attention, and you have a conversation. How can we as a couple become more about we? Strip the selfishness away. Let us come together and become more one. And if you will do that, listen, you are so much better together than you would ever be apart. I'm gonna pray that God does that in your relationship today. Pray with me. Father, I thank you for a church that we wanna open your word and we wanna look to your design for marriage. And God, this mystery of you wanting one together, I wanna acknowledge right now that there are some marriages right now that are hurting. They're hurting so bad, God, and they're broken. They're on the verge of wondering if it's gonna work. And I wanna ask by the power of your Holy Spirit that today would be a day where you begin transforming marriages that are hurting and broken. God, would you help all of us seek you and submit to your will and your design for marriage, not just ours, God. Would we strip the me out of marriage and would it be about we? And God, would you work a miracle and transform us and help us become one the way you designed? We pray this in the powerful name of Jesus, and everyone on all of our campuses said, amen, amen. Hey, next week we are talking about what? Passion. Don't miss it. We'll see you then. Have a great week, everybody.